online at theappliancediscounters.com.
You walk through the door and are greeted with the friendly smell of barbecue smacking you right in the face. A pleasant host seats you at a table made of wood, in a chair made of wood, on a floor made of wood. We perfectly carve a chunk of meat from a bigger chunk of meat. Pavlovian pre-sweat dots your brow and the world melts away as you drift into a meat coma. Wait, was that just Pauly Shore? Welcome to Salt and Smoke.
Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Far away from this life that you live in, you'll find a whole new beginning. Rediscover your family, show them you care for the rest of your life. You gotta be there.
It's time to hit the road. Why not an RV? Quirely's monthly RV school is a non-selling opportunity to learn about operations, use, and maintenance of RVs. And renting an RV can also be an enjoyable learning adventure. Reputation, experience of the selling dealer are also important. We are Byerly, a local, family, employee-owned RV dealer.
For the rest of your life,
Byerly Trailer.
For the rest of your life,
Byerly Trailer.
Rediscover your family, show them you care for the rest of your life.
You gotta be there.
Check us out at ByerlyRV.com, Eureka, Missouri.
Maryville University offers more than 90 innovative, market-relevant degree programs. Maryville invests in state-of-the-art technology to empower its students to learn in an engaging, collaborative environment. Through its Digital World program, students receive free iPads loaded with digital textbooks and more than 150 apps. With a dedicated life coach assigned to each student and a 97% career placement rate, Maryville provides a great return on investment. Check out maryville.edu for more information.
Nana Mama's Pizza will soon be your go-to choice for pizza in St. Louis. That's because Nana Mama's uses only the freshest ingredients, and it's all local. From the freshest locally grown produce to the perfect dough made fresh in-store every day. Pair that with edge-to-edge toppings, and you really can't beat it. Nana Mama's Pizza is a family-owned restaurant that is family-friendly and opens 7 days a week. Come hang out inside or enjoy the day outside in the outdoor seating area located in Baldwin and Creve Coeur. Check them out online at nanamamas.com.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
This reminds me, this go to the lobby thing. My wife is constantly reeling on me about things that I eat. She catches me eating stuff. I try to sneak it. So I go to the pantry last night. And there's a big box of Milk Duds in there. And I didn't buy them. She bought them. Dan, you've been married a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know how this works. Called entrapment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, what'd you tell Milk Duds for? Well, because somebody bought them and put them in there. And the only reason I thought of it is when I heard, let's go to the lobby. It's one of my favorite things to eat with popcorn is peanut M&Ms or Milk Duds or those Rolos. You know what these things are?
Delicious.
Yeah. Well, they like chocolate and caramel or something?
Yeah, pretty Rolos. Much. That's exactly what they are.
You never heard their jingle?
Hang on. Hold on. You can rock and roll-o. Is that it?
Roll-o, and a roll for you. If you're chewy about what you do, creamy chocolate and caramel, too. Choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo.
Well, there was another one, and it was, you can rock and roll-o all day long. You can rock and roll-o. So they had two jingles, apparently, and I never heard the one that you just did. But enough about that. Let's get to our host and to the segment, because I got some stuff that I'd like to throw in there. Our host is Dan Buffa. He is brought to you by Window World, the number one selling replacement window in the United States and the preferred window of the St. Louis Blues. You can find a lot more about him at windowworldst.louis.com. Give it up, if you would, for Dan Buffa.
Hey, how's everybody doing today?
Doing great, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I got a couple reviews this week, and we also have to talk about a certain TV show that came back on Sunday. So we got a lot to discuss.
Can I throw you my new, I don't know what you call it, addiction? I'm two episodes in. Oh, and folks, the yacht from Neiman Marcus, I'm going to save that for the Playhouse. I think you'd get a big kick out of hearing about some of the stuff that rich people are able to buy with their money. But last night, my wife and I watched episode 2, because each one is long. I think each episode is like an hour and a half or 2 hours something. And it essentially, here's the other thing that the listeners will like about this. Unlike some of these things we talk about where you have to have the money to do Amazon or Netflix, all this extended extra pay stuff. This is an FX series, which I believe most basic cable or dish packages have.
I think so.
And it's essentially, to me, almost exactly the same as a successful series that ended a year or two ago, Sons of Anarchy, and it's called The Mayans.
Oh, you've gotten into this, huh?
I'm two in, and even though it's very much Sons of Anarchy 2, I like it. I like it a lot.
Now, are there any representation of that original gang, the Jackson Teller gang, or no?
Is yes. It just some,
oh, there is?
Yes. There are a couple of characters in there that you'll recognize. I think I like it for a couple of reasons. One, I like motorcycles. I've had 17 motorcycles in my life, so I like a bike, and I like anything, any kind of show that sort of the theme is bikes. But I also like, gangs are very, it's very much like a mob movie, a mobster, a mafia movie. It's kind of the same thing. And I like that stuff. I like that, rivalry of gang against gang or mob against whatever, and there's a lot of that and a lot of shooting and a lot of bad stuff that happens, but it's simply called the Mayans MC, and I assume the MC means motorcycle club,
yes.
I'm guessing. But I like it. I'm two in, and I like it a lot, so I just thought I would I'd throw that out there, and now it's all yours.
Well, I have a couple reviews this week, and as we all know, it's October, late October. This is when the Oscar season gets going. All the popcorn films are done, and the heavy-hitting films come out, and I had two this week. I mean, this weekend it came out. And I wouldn't say these are two of the more cheery, uplifting movies that you'll see in theaters, but there are a couple really good ones, and the first one is Beautiful Boy with Steve Carell and Timothée Chalamet, who everybody will know from Call Me By Your Name, and it is a true story about a family's struggle with their son's meth addiction. And let me tell you, this movie, which is based off a memoir, two separate ones by David and Nicholas Sheff, who are basically father and son. Steve Carell plays the dad. Timothée Chalamet plays the son. And this is kind of like he's like the it boy of the moment. He was in Lady Bird. He was in Hostiles with Christian Bale. He was in Call Me By Your Name last year. Now he's in this movie, which he's brilliant in. This movie is great. It's based on a true story, as I said, but it is a hard movie to watch. I don't know about you gentlemen, but seeing a teenager inject crystal meth into his arm, and this is a college kid, and just his struggles over the years of being addicted to drugs and alcohol and everything else, it's just a tough movie to watch, but it's good, and it takes its time in telling the story. This is obviously going to be an Oscar film. I think the kid's going to get nominated. I think Steve Carell was very good. And I got to say, Steve Carell started off, the first time I saw this guy was playing the newscaster in Bruce Almighty as Evan Baxter and making me laugh so hard. And now he's developed into this really dramatic actor that takes on these roles. And this is a tough role because he plays the dad who just can't find a way to get his kid off drugs. And the movie documents thirst basically about, I would say, 5 to 6 years. Again, it's based off two memoirs written by the father and the son. It's called Beautiful Boy, and it's good, but I got to say, it's one of those things you have to admit, it's not going to be easy for people to watch because they are blunt with the drug usage. I mean, they don't turn away. And I don't know if you've ever watched a movie, Frank, where the drug usage and the injections, it's like when he shoots up crystal meth, it's just hard to watch.
Well, I mean, we've all seen movies where there's a scene in Pulp Fiction or whatever, where there's a very realistic scene of somebody shooting up, but it sounds to me like this is more than that. And the title is one of those where, Beautiful Boy, what the heck does that mean? But you can tell from the title it's not going to be a comedy. You can just tell.
No, it's not. And the thing is, he used to sing John Lennon's Beautiful Boy to his son and when he was a little kid, and that's And that's basically what he does it in the movie. That's where he got the title. And the title of David Sheff's memoir is A Beautiful Boy. And Nick Sheff, the son, the title of his was Tweak. So they it's adapting two different books, but they took that title from the dad's memoir, which he based it off of the song, John Lennon's song, that he sung to his kid when he was young.
Isn't that also the song that in Mr. Holland's opus that Richard Dreyfuss kind of rewrote? Remember, he had a deaf
boy named
Cole?
He did, yeah.
And if I remember, there's a scene where he sang Beautiful, Beautiful Cole. He inserted his son's name.
I think he sung Beautiful Boy, but he sign language. He used his fingers to say Cole, yeah. So he was singing it to his son. I've seen that movie.
Okay. It was the same song.
Yeah, it was.
But in this movie, and Steve Carell sings it to his son because the movie, and this is the one fault I have with the movie, is they are trying to work two different books into one movie, so you have a lot of flashbacks to when Nick Sheff was a kid, and because the whole thing that David is having a problem with is that he knew this. You know, Nick Sheff, his son, is very talented. You know, David Sheff was a writer. He wrote for Rolling Stone. He wrote for The New Yorker. And his son was just as talented. But what do you do when your son is so talented, so bright, but they get addicted to drugs? And over this past weekend, the real Nick Sheff and Timothy Chalamet came into town. They came into the High Point Theater to discuss addiction, to discuss the movie. And hearing the real guy discuss it, how he just had to go through, how he felt so bad for his parents because they were trying to help him. But how much can you help a kid when he's just a line at the end of the film, it says that crystal meth, it is the leading cause of death for people under 50 years old in this country. It's this particular drug.
Leading cause including disease?
You know, yeah, I mean, really, for drug, I mean, I think it was for drugs, but...
Of drug deaths.
Yeah, drug deaths. But a lot of them, when you look them up, are crystal meth. That's kind of like the new, I want to say almost like the new heroin, you know, the new thing that's really, and, you know, one of the people that was at this event, you know, they said the 573 area code was really the meth capital of the world here right in Missouri. So, the movie, it's tough to watch, but I think people should watch it. It's got a hopeful ending, I'll give you that. Obviously, with the real kids showing up in St. Louis doing a press tour, but it's not easy to watch. But I think for the performances in this movie, it's worth it. I mean, when I left the movie, I just wanted to go home and hug my kid because he's 7 years old, and there's a lot of scenes in this film where Nick Sheff is seven, and you flash back to when he was a kid and how, you know, him and his dad and that they bonded over music, and my kid and I bond over movies. So that's for me, watching this movie is just thinking ahead. I mean, what if my kid becomes addicted like that? What can I do? And they do go over the things that his father tries to do in order to help his kid. But it's a tough movie, great performances. I think there's going to be some Oscar nominations, but definitely not for the faint of heart. It's not easy. They don't shy away from showing the injection sequences. In one scene, Nick Sheff's girlfriend overdoses. It's tough, but it's really hard to watch, but I think it's worth it.
And Frank, the New York Daily News story that they published a couple months ago does state that the leading cause of death of people in this country under 50 is drug overdose.
Yeah, it's tough. And at one point, the leading drug,
obviously, is meth.
It has to, yeah. At one point in the movie, I mean, they say that Nick Sheff had so many just drugs in his body that he barely survived. I mean, this movie goes to some dark places. A lot of movies, I think, would have showed it, but this movie just goes right up to the front of this disease. I mean, because there's at one point in the film, Nick Sheff is telling his dad over the phone, like, this is not cancer. I'm choosing to be here. I'm choosing to do this. And Steve Carell, I mean, just the look on his face is just heartbreaking because he has no way to stop it.
Well, this is going to be, when I see it, the movie that will determine whether or not I think Steve Carell is a great actor. Because when I see Steve Carell's face, I think comedy. I just do because everything. I never watched The Office, but I saw 40-Year-Old Virgin and a couple other things that when I see him, I think, this is going to be funny. And that's kind of hard to pull off a serious role when a lot of people only think of you. I'll give you another example like this. you know, Zach Galifianakis or
yeah, Zach Galifianakis. Yeah, he's
started. Who's the other guy that
Jonah
I can't
Hill.
Stand?
Jonah Hill.
Well,
was
Jonah Hill has
Wall Street,
turned.
He was good.
I know, but that was
and also Moneyball. Jonah Hill has actually turned that pigeonholing stigma thing around. But who's the guy? Oh my good.
Will Ferrell.
No. It's same. You're in the
Jim
right.
Jim Carrey.
No, not Jim Carrey. I can picture him. I can't
John
think of his
C.
name.
John C. Reilly? Who you
think? No. John C. No, Reilly does.
There's a guy that...
Adam Sandler.
No, it's a big guy. He's a
big guy, beard.
He was in 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Seth Rogen.
There, thank you. Seth Rogen. I, every time I see Seth Rogen, one, I don't like Seth Rogen, but every time I see him, I just think goofy, Weekend at Bernie's type.
The only
bachelor.
Thing that Seth Rogen ever did that was serious, he was good in, he played the right hand. He played the guy that, in Steve Jobs with Michael Fassbender, he played the guy, his name was Dan, the guy who helped Steve Jobs create basically the model for Apple, but... Other than that, I don't think he's ever tried really dramatic. Thankfully, he's ever tried dramatic.
Well, he's another
acting.
One that, to me, still has to prove to me that he's a really great dramatic actor.
But I
think Steve Carell pulled this off.
But it I say like he did. He played that wrestling coach in Foxcatcher with Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo. He was pretty good in that, kind of a dark role, and he played Dan in real life. But this is a tough role because it is all drama. I mean, he can't
rely. Let me ask you, Brad, you keep, every time you say it's tough to watch, you followed it every time you said it with, they show the injections. Is that alone, that's the only thing that makes it tough to watch? Because, look, we've seen some pretty, look, Pulp Fiction, which I thought was a horrible movie, but that shot in the chest
Pulp
of
Fiction.
That.
I love Pulp Fiction. No. You don't like Pulp Fiction?
I don't either.
No.
Oh,
I didn't like that. What do you call the thing you hit them with to bring them back? What do you call that?
The adrenaline.
EpiPen or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty tough to watch. How can this be? You keep saying
I would
it's
say
hard to watch?
I would say as a parent it's tough to watch because you know because you see the kid because it isn't like the kid is just like a dropout loser. He's a bright kid who's going who's getting good grades, and then you just see this drug suck him into this black hole. And it takes him a while to get out of it. And hearing from the real guy, it's just, man, it's a struggle. So it takes you there. I mean, it really takes you there as a parent. But I think even people who want to be parents will watch this movie and go, man, and so hopefully we'll avoid that. But that's great. But the other film that opened up this week is kind of a really...
Hold on. You got to do ARDs.
Oh, ARDs. For Beautiful Boy.
What's it called again? Beautiful Boy.
Beautiful Boy, I would say 3. I'm kind of leaning towards more, but right now I'm going to go 3. It's very much worth watching.
Wow. I expected 3.5 or 4 the way you were talking about it. But here we go. 3 ARDs.
All right, Dan. All right, Dan. All right, Dan.
Hey, before you go to the next movie, Bob said he has a suggestion.
Go ahead. I'd love,
love to hear it. Bob, welcome to 590 The Fan, Bob. What's going on?
Thank you, Frank. Yeah, the past week on Hulu, I watched a couple of, I guess you call them movies. They're not shows. The Long Riders.
I'm guessing it's a Western?
It's a Western.
Long Riders.
But it has
Dan, have you ever heard of that?
Sets of actual brothers in it.
Is it newer? I know Hulu kicks a lot of shows from different networks, but I never gone there for a movie, though.
Well, it's a movie. It has 4 different sets of actual brothers in it. It has the Keach brothers, and it's about Jesse James, Frank James, the younger brothers.
Ooh, Walter Hill directed it. Now it's got my attention. He's a good James Keach, Dennis Quaid, and... Definitely, 1980.
Yeah, had,
all right,
it
okay.
The Keach brothers, the Quaid brothers, the Carradine brothers, and
wow, man, this is a when did this come?
This is 1980s. How did this get by us?
Man, I mean, you got Walter Hill who did the 48 Hours movies with Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy, and you got David Carradine, who the late David Carradine, who was great in Kill Bill. And now you have James Keach, who just pops up in just about everything these days. Dennis Quaid, who acts about once every 5 years. But this sounds like a really, I mean, even...
And Randy Quaid before he lost his mind and went nuts.
Cousin Eddie. Yes. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Wow, I don't know how this was slipped. Apparently, this slipped by all of us because nobody has ever heard of Long Riders. We'll have to check. And Bob, can you only get it on Hulu?
Well, that's the only place that I found
it. It's on Amazon for $3.99, on iTunes for $3.99. So you got three different areas. Hulu, with a subscription, though, it's free. So the other areas,
correct,
you got to pay $4. But, heck, I would pay $4 for this.
We'll check it out.
Yeah.
The one other thing, I've watched another movie about Frank and Jesse James, and I've seen other movies about them before. But when Jesse James gets killed, there's all different scenarios on how he gets killed.
Well, I think there always have been.
It's strange how they take history and move it around.
They've never really known how he got. It's kind of like Hitler. You know, there are different theories as to he killed himself. He didn't kill himself.
Well, I mean, they're all he got shot in the back by one of the Ford brothers. But there's all different ways that happened.
A movie that did that really well was with Brad Pitt. I think it was The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. And that was with Casey Affleck and with Brad Pitt. That was essentially saying that, in a way, Jesse James knew that the Ford brothers were there to kind of kill him, and he kind of gave into it. He hung that picture on the wall, kind of, and he placed his guns on the table before. But that's just one interpretation. But I always thought that was as closest to the real deal because of the way they really went dark with that movie. But that movie interprets it one way, but there's a lot of different ways that they've gone about it over the years.
Yeah.
Okay, Bob. Once again, what's the name of the Jesse James thing? Once again.
The Long Riders.
Oh, that's the same movie. Okay. All right. Got you. Thank you, Bob.
Good Thank stuff. You. Yeah. 1980 movie that just has all these people in it. I mean, Randy Quaid, before he went nuts, is a very good actor. I mean, he's very convincing in a lot of these roles. And looking at a picture from this movie, he looks so young. So does so does James Keach and Keith and David Carradine. So that's definitely one to watch.
All right, listen, one of the things we changed about this, when you have an Uber story, you'll share it with us. When it's not worth sharing, you won't. And the other thing is we're getting calls, and I haven't given out the numbers. So before you continue, you want to let these people jump in and throw their suggestions in.
Well, yeah, because, the Uber story, I mean, that was good for a few weeks, but I've had some very boring riders.
Nah,
but
you get another one, you'll share it. But now
we have this interaction, so let's go with that. That's better than the
Uber
story.
Let me give the phone
numbers,
and then we'll get to Carol's call here. 314-821-0590. That's 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Carol has something. Carol, welcome to 590. The Fan, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I'm aiming the PM.
Thank you.
We have been trying to find a series that came on in 1969.
Then came Bronson.
Wow.
Yeah, hang on a second, Carol. Hey, let me tell you something.
Wow.
We don't like the laughing at 69. Okay, we don't get it, and if you're not going to explain it to us, don't laugh. Carol, do you have any idea what's funny about 69? Do you get it?
I have no idea. I've been listening for a long time, and I don't know.
Yeah, nobody seems to. Yes, then came Bronson, but I cannot remember anything except that I recognize that name, that title.
Well, that was Michael Parks was in it.
Okay. He was a motorcycle rider.
Right. They had the movie, but then they also had the series.
No, I remember it was a great series, too, and he was on a bike. And are you trying to figure out how to find it?
Yeah.
Did you look on YouTube?
We did.
And nothing.
Because we can find the movie.
Okay, but there's not much I haven't been able to find on YouTube, including old TV series. What do you think, Dan?
I think with YouTube, and I think Amazon. I mean, everything I look for on Amazon seems to be on there. I think it has to be on one of those things, at least to where you can get a part of it to watch, to know if you want to watch it, but I think Amazon is the one place that, unlike even Netflix, as far as older stuff, man, that's the place to go.
Carol, here's the last obvious. This is so obvious, maybe you didn't do it. Have you Googled the question, where can I find the 1969 TV series, Then Came Bronson? Have you Googled that?
Not for a couple years now.
I tried again because if you Google, I'll bet you it'll direct you to Amazon or whatever. If you just say, "Where can I find the series?" Then Came Bronson. Try that.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
All right, Carol. Thank you. Wow, you know, every once in a while, somebody they'll bring up an old TV series, and then it automatically reminds me of one that, if I knew where to find it, I'd watch the whole series all over again. And I'll give you an example. One was Run for Your Life with Ben Gazzara. And I think it was a story of a guy who had 2 years to live. So literally running for his life. There were things that's all I remember. And the other one was David Jensen, The Fugitive.
Oh, yeah.
The original, not the movie with Harrison Ford, the original Fugitive. Man, my dad, he never missed The Fugitive with
How about
David
this one,
Jensen.
The Rockford Files with James Garner.
Never heard of it.
I watched so many of those. He was like a private investigator.
Never even heard of it.
The Rockford Files. I'm telling you, they were on for so many episodes.
Dan, it's a joke. We play their theme every day. When we introduce Tim Woodward, we play it every day.
I watched it all the time. And, you know, I didn't like it, but he put it on, so I watched it. So it was all right. Okay. But James Garner was great in Maverick, by the way. That's who I know him most as. But
did anybody... right, back to you.
All right, so where was I at now?
Or whatever. I don't know. You had something else.
We okay, the second movie, the second calls. Of our... I'm going to call it the kind of like the downer movie weekend reviews is what I have. So Beautiful Boy is one. The next one is What They Had, and it stars Hilary Swank, another actress who doesn't really seem to work that often.
No,
but
hold on. Really? Hilary Swank? No.
Wait a second. I'm pretty sure she's attractive if I'm thinking of the right person.
In the right light.
In the right light. In the right really dim light.
It's like that girl that Seinfeld
was dating. She was a billion-dollar baby. She was...
she's attractive. I mean, she's got a big forehead, but yeah, she's attractive.
Yeah, drive-in movie theater up there.
Buffy, no, she has a five head.
Raspberry a boing about 2 months
she's
ago.
She's got a five head.
Yeah, he did. No, you're right. He did.
Oh,
he did.
Man.
What's up? Who, what?
He gave Angela Lansbury a boing 2 months ago.
Hey, you are lonely. Hey, I will say, Limey, I'm with you. I found that crazy chick on Ozark to be kind of hot, so I'm with you when it comes to that.
Well, that's different than Angela Lansbury. That hot
Murder She Wrote.
Lansbury.
Smart women.
Murder She Wrote. Limey will make you a nice, sweet little dinner, Angela.
He wouldn't give Amy Schumer a boing, and he gave Angela Lansbury one.
I gave
one.
Amy Schumer
no,
a boing.
I wouldn't give Amy Schumer a boing. I wouldn't give
Amy Schumer anything. Looks like she's the giving type, so I give Amy Schumer definitely
a
sound. Yeah, half a boing. Half a boing.
Can I do that? Hang on a second.
There you go. So we have a movie called What They Had, and Hilary Swank is in it, and our favorite actor on this show, at least, Michael Shannon, is in it as well. And I will say, Frank, he is playing kind of a regular, ordinary guy. There's nothing twisted about him. He's not a villain. He plays...
That's right. I'm the guy
Dan,
next
Dan,
door.
Dan, you didn't even give me a chance to say... I was going to say, you know, I interviewed Michael Shannon, and now you
He went right into it.
Oh, my God.
Mike Shannon in studio today.
Oh, man.
So, I'll tell you what, Limey, edit out right where Dan
Let's
went.
Let's do it.
Just edit that out.
All right, I got you. 1 second.
Radio edit.
So you know, Dan, I talked this morning with Michael Shannon.
You did?
And I said, yeah. And I said, Michael, how does it feel to finally play just kind of a regular guy, not some crazed FBI agent, not some deranged weirdo? How does that feel? Here's what he said.
Well, I got to tell you, it was a little bit strange, but I was sitting in my backyard barbecuing a little bit. Popping open a handy 48 pack, it was pretty good.
Mike Shannon, 48 pack, where you never come back from. Great. Even if it's Natty Light, you never come back from a 48 pack. You'll think your name is something really different. You think your name is Theodore, Michael, Joseph? What?
Nah, he can handle a 48 pack.
He probably can.
Oh yeah.
But
all right, so I've never heard of this movie.
This movie again, it's more of an independent film. It's got Robert Forster, who was in Jackie Brown. He's a very good veteran actor, and. Blythe Danner. I don't know. You'll probably know her face if you saw her in a movie.
Blythe Danner. Would you call her Blythe?
Blythe. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, my
God. Idiot.
You know what? If you're going to be a movie reviewer, let me edit that out. Let him get another shot at that. I don't want people to hear that.
Radio edit.
And here's Dan, I understand. Edit that out again. Edit that out.
The Dans are having a rough one.
So, Dan, I understand a very well-known older actress, been around for a long, long time, is in it, too. Who is that?
Blythe Danner.
Oh, yeah, I know her.
She's in it, and the movie centers around a family, and the Beautiful Boy was centering on Crystal Meth usage. This is about Alzheimer's, and Danner's character has it, and in this case, it has gotten really bad. Forster plays her husband, and Hilary Swank and Michael Shannon are her kids, and the movie basically kind of centers around them all coming home. She comes home from the West Coast because they have to figure out what to do. She is stage six in Alzheimer's, so she is kind of getting close to the stage where she's going to forget everything. And
stage six?
Yeah.
I didn't know there was.
I mean, there is. And Shannon's character wants to put he's kind of the son that wants to put her in a home. Forster's husband does not. Hilary Swank is kind of in the middle. So the whole movie is essentially the kids kind of working over the father and saying, look, she isn't going to remember. I mean, imagine being, and this disease is always fascinating. Imagine forgetting everything you know. I mean, forgetting, in one situation, Danner's character just says to everybody at the table, hey, I think I'm going to have some kids. She tells her kids, hey, I think I'm going to have some kids. And Michael Shannon's character goes, really, Mom? You're going to have some kids? It gets so bad. And the movie, again, it handles the topic of this disease with humor. There's a lot of funny moments in the film. Elizabeth Chomko, who wrote and directed the movie, she dealt with this in real life. Her parents dealt with this disease. And I would say this cast is just amazing. Robert Forster, who has not really been in a lot of movies. He's probably been...
Do we know who that is? Can you give us something?
He was great in Jackie Brown. He was the bail bondsman that worked with Pam Grier in that movie. But he doesn't work a lot. He's kind of an older actor. He's probably about Sam Elliott's age when it comes to as far as the age group of actors, but he doesn't work as often as Sam Elliott's. But he's great. He plays the sympathetic husband who doesn't want to put his wife in a home while his children are kind of leaning in that direction. And I got to say, it's a very honest representation of Alzheimer's. They don't just glaze over it. It's not just a little plot device. You see a family that grew up with this woman. I mean, it's their mother start to forget who they are. I mean, when she walks into a room, she doesn't really notice that Hilary Swank.
Right, let me stop and ask a question of everybody.
Go ahead.
In the room. Has anybody in this room had in your family serious severe dementia / Alzheimer's? Anybody?
Yeah.
Around it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
My grandmother.
Yeah, mine too.
It's one of the...
It's strange.
Most... I don't even know the word for it. When you're in the presence of somebody who's known you your whole life, and they don't know you mm-hmm. from the guy who just walked in to deliver the UPS box. They don't. Mm-hmm. They have no clue who. It is the weirdest thing. And what's really sad is physically. I mean, you could be in the greatest shape in the world.
You could
be 80 years old and be able to, you know, hop a fence and keep running, but you don't, your mind is gone.
She asked me, I walked past her twice, and she asked me two times who I was.
Who is this, though?
My grandma, my mom's mom. Okay.
She asked me twice who I was. And to me, it's almost like, you remember when you have a really good dream, but you can't remember the details? That, to me, is kind of like that disease, but it gets worse and worse. Oh. Like you have this very interesting dream, and then you wake up and you go, man, I can't remember it. It was so interesting.
My grandfather's sister was a nun, Sister Mary DePaul. She had Alzheimer's so bad that they actually took me to visit her one time when I was a young teenager, and we all walked in the room. Nobody even said hi to her. She was just there awake, staring out the window, and we all just like talked to each other for about 15 minutes and said, well, it's been good seeing you, bye, and walked out the room.
Just aloof.
Here's the tough call when you have somebody in your family who has Alzheimer's. Let's say it's stage six. Let's say it's as severe as it
it's
can
the be. It's the worst.
There's seven stages, right?
You have to make a decision, and it's a tough one. Do we go and keep visiting regularly when we know this person doesn't even know who we are or that we were there? Because you feel guilty if you don't, but you feel like you've just completely wasted your time, her time, his time, everybody's time by going there.
The problem is
you go anyway out of guilt.
I asked my grandparents that very question. I said, why do you keep going if she doesn't know you're there? And they said, because we're not convinced she doesn't know we're here. She can't show us she knows we're here, but she can't. They weren't convinced that she didn't know.
And in the movie, there's a scene where, again, Forster's character is so reluctant to put her in a home, and then Shan's character goes, Dad, she just hit on me in the car. And it's the look on Forster's face is just, I mean, he's just broken. I mean, I have that
line lifted from the movie, if you want to hear it, Michael Shannon saying, Dad, she just hit on me. You want to hear it?
I do.
Bring it.
Powerful. Here is Michael Shannon from the movie saying, Dad, she just hit on me. Here it is.
Dad, she just hit on me like a big old home run. I said, get
and listen,
up, baby,
listen.
To anybody,
okay, thank you, Michael. And to anybody listening, we're not in any way making fun of anybody. Wait. We're not making fun of anybody with Alzheimer's or the disease of Alzheimer's. We're not.
Nope, we're making fun of Mike Shannon.
That's right.
But because I will, I'll tell you, I told the story once before. My uncle had it, my dad. It kind of almost like it ran in the family or something. And it's when Tim said some or whoever said sometimes they're not sure whether or not they knew you were there. I think it's pretty well documented, and any doctor will tell you, they don't have any idea who you are. They don't have a clue. They don't know you were there. I don't want to bring this show completely down, but I had a couple of things happen that had to do with people who had Alzheimer's, and it's all you can do to just not, you want to go over and just shake him and go, look at me. It's me, you know, but it wouldn't do any
it's
good.
Tough.
It would just,
yeah.
It would scare them. And here's what's interesting too. They're all over the country, but I went through a place in Belleville and it was strictly a facility for Alzheimer's patients. And this is the one thing I will never forget. There's a lot I don't remember. They showed me a lot and introduced me to people. But I do remember this. It was like a hotel. Okay, everybody, each resident had a room, and you have Alzheimer's, you have severe stage 6, whatever. You have a room. Now, there are no numbers on the doors because when you leave the room to go down the hall for breakfast, you don't remember the number of your room. But you know what was posted right at the door by the doorknob? Right outside the door of every residence was a black and white picture of that person when they were in their 20s. And everybody there recognized themselves in their 20s. But if you showed them a picture you took yesterday, they wouldn't have any idea it was them.
Yeah, and at one point in the movie, I mean, they even ask, and they point to Robert Forster's character, go, who is that, Mom? And she goes, that's my boyfriend. It's like, it's not like she doesn't know who he is, it's just the identity, as far as really being accurate with who someone is, it starts to fade really fast. And this movie is special because in 2014, Julianne Moore was in a film called Still Alice, which dealt with situation from the person who had the disease. This one focuses more on the family members, the ones that are trying to make that hard decision. So again, it deals with a dramatic topic, but it involves comedy to make it seem lighter. And the cast, again, I think Forster is going to get an Oscar nomination. I think he's great as the dad. Michael Shannon is great in everything, but even here, playing the son who has to be the one to tell your dad, hey, we need to put Mom in a home. It's a tough situation, but he makes it real and sympathetic, and you believe him, and you understand his intentions. And while I think Hilary Swank, again, she's won 2 Oscars, she's great, I think she kind of has the underwritten role, the one that doesn't get as much juice as the Shannon role or the Forster role. So, but she's still great. She's a great actress. But this movie, I think it really shines a light, and an honest light, on Alzheimer's. I think it really does. So I'm going to give this one 3.
They both and got, what's it called again? What's it called?
What They Had.
Okay. How many?
I'm going to give it 3.
Okay. Two movies with 3. Here they come.
All right, Dan.
Hey, if people just give me 1 minute, I want to retell something. It has to do with this Alzheimer's thing. When somebody asks you the question, if you're on the stand in court and they say, have you ever lied in your life? I don't think there's a living human being who could say no and have that be an honest answer. And I'm going to give you an example. I'll tell you one time I lied, and I'm glad I did. I feel good about it. And it was in a hospital. And I forgot, I think I was visiting my father-in-law or something when he was dying. I don't remember. But there was an old, old woman, and she was so thin. It's like a skeleton. And she was just, and she had severe Alzheimer's. And when her room was near, you know, my father-in-law's or whoever I was visiting, and I walked by, and she motioned to come in the room, and she starts calling me Ed. And I stepped out for a second, and the nurse heard it and saw it, and she said, she thinks you're her son. She keeps talking about her son, Ed, and how she can't wait till Ed comes to visit her. And she said, from what we can gather, her son is not going to come visit her. He's pretty much written her off and doesn't care, and she's just hanging on this hope that he'll show up. And she called out for me again, Ed, and I walked in. I said, Mom. And she said, oh, my goodness. She said, Ed, I told him you'd come. She says, I knew you would come. And I said, Mom, how you feeling? And she starts telling me, and then she starts asking me if I remember, and how's my sister? And I said, she's great. And she asked about you, and everybody's is praying for you. And this woman, this old woman, just like lit up. And when I went to leave, she looked at the nurse, and she says, I told you he'd come. So I lied. I lied. That's a lie. I'm not Ed, but I felt great. I felt great about it because this poor woman didn't have anybody. And I think if her real son had shown up, she might not have even known who he was. She wouldn't even known me from him. It's a bad deal. And I think when it's at its worst is when people like Ronald Reagan, and not just famous or wealthy people or experts, somebody has to linger with. How long was Reagan in bed with Alzheimer's? Like 8 years or something. I mean, it was horrible. Tough. That's the worst, is when somebody has to be like that for years. Life is pretty cruel sometimes. So we got 3 and 3. Is there any other movie or show or anything?
I think we have to get in. Before I leave, I want to get into Ray Donovan because that returned on Sunday.
Saw it.
I'm telling you, this season.
I was there. He's back, buddy.
He's back. He's got a lot of hair. He's got a beard. And basically, when they want to toughen up a character even more, they just go, give him a beard. And give him more hair, and he shows up in this like sweater. But I think this season, and my only worry when I watched the trailer was how are they gonna? What's the timeline? Because in the trailer, the preview for the season, you see him in current Ray mode, jumping off that building, and then coming out of it with the cop, and then you see him getting off that bus, looking all a little bit more ragged and bearded and kind of more hair. But they really saw that whole thing in the first episode. He's kind of back, and he's living with this cop who saved his life, and he's in New York. And
what happened last year? I think a lot of people were disappointed because Ray had gone kind of soft. And, you know, where's the old Ray?
Well, his wife died. I mean, come on. But
I know, but they make too much of that. Let's get him back to beating people up, fixing problems. And by the way, Susan Sarandon looks great.
Yeah, she is gorgeous. I don't care how old she's got a movie coming out this Friday called the Viper Club, and I'll review that on next week's show. But she doesn't age. I mean, I watched Bo Durham from 88, and then I watched Ray Donovan in this past Sunday, and like, man, you just don't age. She doesn't even need a lot of makeup. She's just pretty.
And here's the way I describe it. First of all, she's got some fantastic boobs.
Yes, she does.
Susan Sarandon, to me, and I always said, she looks like she needs a shower, and I'd like to take it with her. You know, she's just got that sort of nasty, sexy edge.
And she's never changed
beautiful.
Her look.
She's not glamorous. She's not gorgeous. She's just kind of
She's never changed her look much either. She's always had that color hair. I mean, maybe for Dead Man Walking, she got a little bit really kind of rough looking. But even then, she was pretty. So in this movie, in this series, she's back. And if anybody can bring Ray out of his hiding, it's Susan Sarandon's She's a producer, but she's also just kind of like the king of many corporations in this series. It seems like she can just get her hands on anything. Like, if you want a story not to go in a paper, call this person. If you want somebody killed, call this person. And Ray Donovan is kind of more content in this opening episode to just kind of be like, disappear, because he doesn't want to do the life anymore. You know, he's kind of tired. And I tell you, Liev Schreiber, who can do this character with his eyes closed, he just, and again, he's a producer on the show, so he is able to take out dialogue. And I know he does, because there's so many times on this opening episode where I think Ray wanted to talk, but Liev was probably like, no, he doesn't need to talk. Just let him look at him all tired and beaten up. Because for the majority of this episode, Frank, he's beaten up, man. He tries to go after a cop, he gets beat up. The cop, they go after firemen, they get beat up. And he just basically gets punched for a living in this episode.
Well, the word that is spoken in Ray Donovan more than any other word in the Boston, that's it, sure.
But in this one, did he say it once? I don't think he said it once. He said, when the mayor, when she said, are you going to do this, he said, right, yeah, sure.
Maybe when they sat down at the end of last season, they stopped saying sure.
Because on the radio shows, they're quoting you. But I got to say, there's a lot of stuff being set up. I mean, in 1 hour, you see Bunchy losing custody of his kid. You see Terry, who's very forgiving of Ray. He comes around. Ray, you know, he hasn't seen him for months. Hey, Ray, whatever you need, man. And then, of course, his assistant helps him out. This guy, I swear, I just think that he just wants to be left alone. But I think in order to replace his pain, I think he likes to do these jobs. I think he likes to kind of work in these dirty, muddy waters and kind of help these bad people. And, of course,
we're running out of time. For people who don't know, and look, I'm well aware of the fact a lot of people listening right now have no idea what we're talking about, so I don't want to go on.
Ray Donovan
is on Showtime. It stars Liev Schreiber. He's a fixer. He's the guy when things go south. Ray, I'm in trouble. Help me. Get me out of this. Shows up, and he fixes it. That's what he does. So, and it's Sunday nights on Showtime, as I said. Okay, and we're about out of time.
Yeah, season 6 starts. So you got some homework to do, folks, if you want to watch it before Sunday. 6th season started on Sunday. It's a good show, and for a guy like Liev Schreiber, who's a great actor, it's a showcase for his talent. So give it a look. Next week I'll be back with more reviews, but for now, I'm Dan Buffa. I've had enough of it.
I'm going to take all of you guys out for a
Mike Chen's microphone off. We must have left it on. He's on by satellite. That's Dan Buffa, courtesy of Window World, the number one selling replacement window in the United States, the company that makes segments like this one possible throughout the week on this show, and the preferred window of the St. Louis Blues. You can find out a whole lot more about Window World Windows, the company, the product, everything, at windowworldstlouis.com. When you change jobs, and I want to say, and that's usually a good thing. Oh, I got a better job. Sometimes it's not better. You just had to change jobs. But when you do, whether it's for a better job, a lateral move, or just because it's a job you had to change, either way, if you have a 401k, if you have a retirement plan of any kind, let me tell you something. There's some things you need to know. Questions you should ask that you might not even know to ask, and answers you probably don't have to those questions, like should you cash out your IRA, or do you roll it over to your 401k, rather, or do you roll it over to an IRA? Do you pay taxes on the money? I think a lot of people think, well, just take the money out, and that's the end of it. What about penalties? What about a favorable tax treatment? Is there some sort of favorable treatment because it's a 401k? What's the growth potential of the money? And on and on and on. I have a couple of people who can answer these questions and questions like this for you. Mark Reardon and Jason Becker with Stifel. Stifel is a member of the SIPC and the NYSC. Mark and Jason are financial advisors. I want you to set up a meeting with them. I'm asking you to consider it. Let's put it that way. Complimentary meeting. No charge. No obligation. No pressure. You have $25,000 or more. It doesn't have to be a 401k, or you don't have to be retiring or changing jobs. I'm just addressing those particular people now. Anybody listening with $25,000 or more, set up that meeting. Again, it won't cost you anything. And why wouldn't you? What's wrong with a great second opinion, especially when it's coming from somebody who'll be more than happy to tell you if some of the things you're doing are right? They'll tell you they're right. They're not out to change everything, just the things they think they can change for the better. Mark and Jason, you hear the website every day, you're about to hear it again. MarkandJason.com. The Playhouse is coming up. Another joke that has not been told in the 13 months, let's see, just a couple days away from 13 months on the show, so stay right where you are. It's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is Larry Connors. You're listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River, and 590thefan.com St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. The President and First Lady Melania Trump are visiting the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh after Saturday's shooting massacre there. The tragedy took 11 lives. Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, and White House Chief of Staff John Kelly are part of the presidential entourage. While in Pittsburgh, the President's expected to meet with some shooting victims, victims' families, and first responders. Vice President Mike Pence supports